Music. Well, it's a gift of God, isn't it? It's a gift of life, music. I mean, I'm arthritic and everything, but as soon as I've got a stick in my hand and start playing, you think there's no room with you.
Welcome back to Town Sounds, the oral history podcast. This episode is entitled The Gift of Life, How Music Helps Us All. It was Peter Philpott who opened up the episode and who inspired the title. And as far as anyone can tell at the moment, this is likely going to be the very final episode of the Town Sounds podcast. It's an ode to music, this thing that ties us together, that allows us to express ourselves in ways no other thing can. It takes us to extra levels of consciousness, brings us to tears, and then makes us jump for joy, dance, wail, and laugh. It gives us shared memories, ties us to our heritage, frames our spiritual beliefs. It helps us cope and then frustrates us, keeps us awake at night. It stops us from thinking about anything else. This thing that touches us at unexpected times, that gives us meaning and helps us get out of bed in the morning. This thing that keeps us living and keeps us feeling alive. These are the topics of the day. Music as a fundamental source of life. Barney Stevenson.
Feels to me to be a fundamental human instinct. To me, it's so socially important that it must have been foundational to our evolution as a species, in the same way that discovering fire and cooking food was foundational to our development of larger brains. It feels like it's as important as like the discovery of fire and cooking and so on. Music is like absolutely fundamental to our existence.
I'll be speaking very little on the subject today, as I have a huge list of guests to get through. Here's our next guest, Mary Agnes Krell, the founder and organiser of the Grand Northern Ukulele Festival. Like Barney, you can hear more from Mary in episodes 1 of the 2023 Town Sounds podcast.
I love music. Music makes me happy. My husband and I, like, we lead a little community ukulele club. But again, it's not about the ukulele. The ukulele is just an excuse for community singing. Every week, at the end of the night, we sing Show Me the Way to Go Home. And it's a cliche, and it's funny. But at that moment, every week, I feel pretty much completely alive. Leading a dozen strangers, and everybody else in the bar, because they all love the song, singing Show Me the Way to Go Home, I'm tired, I want to go to bed. Music has saved my life. Music saves my life every week. I thought I was going to die from cancer, and I didn't die from cancer, and I ended up creating a music festival.
Music, for many people, is cathartic. It provides substantial coping mechanisms to deal with the rest of life. And this is where we start our story. Music as a way to live through life's ups and downs. We'll hear from Nigel Kudjoe, the founder of the creative imprint and social enterprise Saving Grace. You can hear him talking more in episode 9 about Saving Grace, but here he is talking about his Saving Grace.
Oh, two ways. I guess creating, writing, definitely catharsis. You can get things off your chest. You can almost be your own shrink. When making it and creating it, it's cathartic and it's definitely a relief. Producing is more hypnotic in a way, and writing's a bit more mind exercise. Like remembering rhymes, I've definitely improved the elasticity of my memory. Like writing rhymes and having to, you know, like it's definitely helped my brain be more stretchy, and remember things and snap back into multitask. Do you know what I mean? Like I know I've been on stage rapping, I'm wondering if I've left the grill on. And I'm literally rapping all the words. I've not missed a bar. And I'm thinking, and I can picture my kitchen, and I'm thinking, did I turn that off? And I'm still rapping the song. So that's like, I know rap's given me that. Maybe it was there, but it's brought it out of me and made it, you know, strengthened that muscle, or whatever you want to call it.
Nigel mentions music as therapy. Music as a way into flow state, and music as an improvement of intelligence. We'll get to those former two topics later, but for now, let's stick with music as a therapy. We'll hear from singer Pat Fulgoni, who features in episode 9 and 10, and then from contemporary composer Ryoko Akama, who speaks in episode 11. Before them, this is local rock and roll legend Colin Binns, who you can hear in episode 3.
I'm very, very fortunate in that music has always got me through any kind of stress, problems. I had to keep working, and the music industry became a job, a necessity. That's when, if I had a bad night or a less good night, I thought, wow, this is hard work. When you had I had some great nights, wonderful nights, and that made it all worthwhile. So just when you think you're going to pack in because, oh, I don't like this, you have a good night and then you think, oh, I love this, you know, I can't wait for tomorrow night. Tiring, yes. But as far as mental state is concerned, music has been a boon. I think music is a boon for a lot of people with stress problems. Music and comedy. Without music and comedy, the world would be an awful place.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as a musician, I'm quite an emotional person, and I feel a lot better when I sing. It's as simple as that. It's like some people like running marathons. I'm not that kind of person. I need to get it out as a singer, you know, and it's very good. It keeps me alive, helps me cope with the stresses of life, you know, and I guess most musicians are like that. And also, just, you know, when people come and see bands, you know, if we were talking about Timeless Festival, everyone was saying, oh, what a great time it was. Yeah, it was so cool. You know, I feel really happy. You know, it was good to see this person. It was good to see that person. All that stuff is just so overwhelmingly positive for such a small spend in funding. I think it's important for mental health reasons.
I think too much, and then, well, there's a bit of a saying, but if you're worried, you're thinking about the future. If you're depressed, you're thinking about the past. Just be happy, then you are thinking about the present. So maybe, like, you know, the listening to music is about, like, be this right now, and then I'm just thinking about that rather than worrying or feeling depressed. So currently, yeah, that's what music is all about for me.
It's quite hard to stay on topic here because each is entwined with the others. But I'll try for a while longer to stay with music as some form of catharsis. When you have your own shrink, as Nigel puts it, for your whole life, music becomes an absolutely essential thing, a coping mechanism that you rely on to get through. Next, we'll hear two people that describe music in this way, like it is inseparable from them as humans, that without it, they wouldn't be them, or without it, a part of their personality disappears and leaves them feeling empty. First, singer Fatima Hammer, then drummer, whistle player and singer Aidan Kilroy. You can hear more from them in our episodes about migration and folk, respectively.
Music is something which is part of me. I am not a singer, I just sing. And whenever emotion, whenever I have a joy or take, you know, if I just missed my mom, and the way I just express it, I just sing for her. And I sing, all my house just came loud as I could sing, and I take it out and I feel better.
I love it. I love it. I just need it. I crave it, you know. So it's my kind of outlet. I'm not anyways a phenomenal musician or, you know, anything like that, but I just like that space, that creative space for songs and for playing the drum in different contexts and stuff, and I love to have that private space, or play with somebody else is great, because that's great for my sanity and my well-being, mental health. And I didn't realise that until we went into lockdown, and I didn't play at all in lockdown, and I just focused on work. I didn't play any music at all. I hardly sang in the house, didn't play the drum at all, didn't play anything really, and until lockdown finished and we started playing again, I didn't realise how much I actually missed it, and how much you kind of get yourself into a place where, I don't know, it wasn't that I was struggling or suffering for the lack of music, but I just knew once I went back into the music, it was like, oh, this is the good place, this is the happy place, this is where I should have been, and this is what I've been missing, and I realised how much I missed the music, and that was just playing with other people. But yeah, it's crucial.
Some of these interviews were done during or very shortly after the lockdown of the COVID-19 pandemic. That's why the audio quality varies somewhat, because some of the interviews were conducted online. For most people, the lockdown was hard, but for musicians, there was a specific difficulty with it that one of their main coping mechanisms they've used for their whole lives, playing music with other people, suddenly disappeared for months and months. I spoke to one of the founders of Hoot Creative Arts for episode 6. We were separated, but things had started to get back to normal. Here, he talks about the contrast of lockdown versus normal and gives us some food for thought.
It's been utterly joyous. So for me, being in a room full of people playing music together is one of the best things. You know, it's kind of, I can't begin to, you know yourself, I can't begin to describe how important it is. I think with that importance comes some problems if you can't do it. So I think the whole kind of post-pandemic situation is like, now what do you dare hope for? And if you dare hope for that and it doesn't happen, can you deal with the disappointment? But if you don't hope for anything, life's just a desert. So there's a kind of interesting sort of psychological equation about what is it that you dare hope for. So for me, it's been a jolt, pandemic, in terms of what you can and what you can't do. But I think I've ended up with a kind of reaffirmed faith in the importance of musical engagement for me personally.
Many of my interviewees touch upon this topic more generally. What is life without music? Paul Rushworth, Anne Tallboys and Swearengit Kaur talk on this subject next, all from differing perspectives. You can hear them respectively in episodes 3, 2 and 4.
Well, I can't imagine what I would have done had it not been for music, no. To be honest. In early days, flitting about from job to job and then finding music, you know, and going through the experiences that we did and meeting the people we did. No, I don't think I wouldn't have done anything,
no.
Anything like it at all, but yeah, absolutely fantastic. Mm.
It's really important that we carry on these traditions. My husband and I are both very keen. We attend lots and lots and lots of music and drama events. We subscribe to the Huddersfield Choral, so we see everything that they do. And we try to go to most of the concerts at the Town Hall, just about all the performances at Lawrence Battley. It's such an integral part of my life that it's difficult to say how it impacts, but I know that without music, without singing, without performing, without watching, my life would be quite a sad life, really. Now, particularly as retired people, we have the opportunity to see all these amazing things and perform, and it's brilliant. Music just, it trips your emotions, doesn't it, in every way. And performing music is even more up front, if you like, because you get all those emotions and you're actually performing it yourself, and you hope that you're passing on those emotions to your fellow singers and also your audiences. So it's key, I think. It is so sad to see the fact that the performing arts have been drummed down in the national curriculum. I think it's appalling.
I love it. Even if when I'm sad or something, you put music on, it's just, no job is hard for me. Cleaning a house and cleaning up after your children without music, I can't do that. I put that on and it's just really, really takes me. I don't realize how much I miss back home until I start listening to music. You know, you get so busy with your day-to-day life. But I always relate it to, okay, where did I listen to that song first? What was I doing when this was happening? Oh, I was with my cousins, I was with my friends, I was in that year when this song came out. So it just takes me back to those happy days, happy memories, childhood, carefree life. And I really enjoy it. And just constant, straight away, put massive smile on my face. And And children know it too, that when Bhangra music is on, folk music is on, I am happy. In my car, it's my zone, I play my music, and it's just, it's really, without music, I don't think I could, without my Bhangra music, without my bulia, without my Gidda performance dance, I don't think I'm complete. I will not be me without all of that, so massive part of me.
Swearengit briefly mentions music's ability to connect one to their heritage and past. This is the topic my guests will explore next. Mohamed Rezabaldi is an academic of the music of Busha and a player himself. Frank Grombay, speaking straight after him, is a musical historian. He's from the Czech Republic and has done research into the migration of people into Kirklees.
Everyone needs the music. You know, the music is a box full of spiritual mysteries and memories and smell, and that you brought it from your background, your history, your own memories. All of them is in this box. And when you play, and when you hear, and when you experience, performing the music is the way that help you to connect with your past and connect with the other people with a very universal language, maybe with different accent, but everyone can understand it.
Whenever I play, it just gives you pleasure. It's type of a therapy. You know, if you are in a bad mood or you need a bit of uplifting, you just grab the guitar and just sing anything that comes into your mind from your childhood. That's how you connect to your past, to your language, to your country. Music is a means also to carry on culture, language, meaning, all sorts of things. So through whether it's songs, all sorts of songs actually, just singing them before bed. We have this popular song that I sing to my kids, and this was the favourite song back in the 1988 during the Velvet Revolution. It was sung by Jaroslav Hutka, and it's about, I think the last part is about freedom, type of thing. It's just a really nice type of song that you can sing to kids before bed, but it's not really a lullaby or anything, you know, or a bedtime song, but they like it.
You might recognise both of these quotes from our folk and migration episodes of the podcast. Well, our next guest, Amira Husarevic, appears on both of those episodes as well.
Yeah, music make you, like I said, very happy. But what happened just a few nights ago, some people came from Germany, and they brought little boy and asked me to play a little bit for him. And when I start playing, these people start crying. And I was crying as well, because what happened, I remind them when they was little how we used to be come together when we celebrated birthday, New Year Eve, and things like that. And they always, everybody liked me to come because I will play and they will sing and they will enjoy, you know, everybody. Like we have 30 people in a house all together. It's so nice. And this night when I'm doing this, it reminds them on me, you know, on the past. And that was really sad and big guy. And yeah.
As Amira points out there, music acts as a landmark to many special occasions. We remember birthday celebrations by the song that accompanies it. Christmas, of course, in Western culture, has many songs that bring a sharp focus to that time of year. The same is true with other holidays, with a foundation in religion and spirituality, and with New Year's Eve and many other special times of the year. Music acts as a frame for these times, but also as a social lubricant to help us interact and be with each other in a more fluid and joyful way. In singing together, we feel united, connected, and intimately together. The intimate frequencies of our voices merge and we become one singing entity. As a result, we feel more able to talk, connect, and be with each other. Strangers become friends. And when we oil our social wheels in this way, things can quickly get moving. Next, we'll hear from two people whose love life correlates exactly with music. Emily Drews told us in episode 13 about her romantic and musical partnership with Steve Jones. She'll now tell us about music as a point of collective togetherness. Then we'll hear from Julie Bukovietz, wife of Mark Bukovietz, both of whom appeared in episodes 1 and 11. Emily Drews first.
Yeah, because you've got another focus somehow. You haven't got to worry about how you're presenting yourself, have you? It's like, you know, you're in that together. It's a very social. So the groups that I didn't talk about as much, really, they're an opportunity to come together and socialise women with who are coming to the centre for loads of different reasons. And somehow music holds that. You know, it can hold people in really different altered states or you know, stages in their lives. And somehow, you know, you can spend a couple of hours together and none of that matters at all. You know, you're completely socialising easily through music, doing away with the awkwardness, as you say. You know, yeah.
You know, it's such an intimate process, creating something together, you know, that we had to get married at the end, you know. It's what we do, it's part of our life, you know, and it's like breathing together. It's like body breathing under the sea, I suppose, when we're working together. Two people are really sort of close to each other. They speak to each other in kind of like almost like, you know, half sentences. It's really useful for the kind of work we do. The work is us and we are the work, you know, and I always feel great when we're in the studio. It's a really sacred place, really, a real kind of special part of our relationship.
A final note on social lubricant from punk musician Andrew Turner. He now works for a record label. He talks about the Kirklees punk scene in the 80s in episode 11, but here he is now.
When I was younger, I couldn't wait to get out of home. And then I just feel, and then now it's, you come back and it's, yeah, I mean, what can you say? Either you're coming off motorway and Emily move all them hills and stuff, or you're getting off train. It's great. I mean, we don't get to come back as long as we can, or should do, really, and see as many people as we should. But we come up and we just get everybody together. We've had some raucous nights with, the Sportsman one. I mean, like, there were a load of people just met up from bands. Cuzzy, that used to be in Instigators with us. Mick Moore and Vic Vespa from Kilometres. Kev from, used to be in Frogs of War, and a load of other people. But I get up every morning and want to go to work. It's fine. I share an office at the moment with a guy called Eugene Butcher that does Viva La Rock magazine and Fistful of Metal, and he's a really old mate. Long story how it came about, but we're just in there every day playing dodgy music and taking a piss out of each other and getting work done. You know, it's like, yeah, and then I get to see some great bands. Yeah, I spent a lot of time without any money, any gas, any electric, you know. It's like, come back and everything had been turned off. You don't just scrabble to pay your bills, but met a load of people. A lot of them are still around as well, both here and worldwide, that we'd never, ever, ever have done. Like, got to see a lot of places.
Our next guest transitions us nicely from music as a communal activity to one which can transport you to another consciousness entirely. This is Eddie Dobson. After they've spoken, we'll hear from Dee Dee. You might remember them from episodes 6 and 8.
Oh, wow, goodness. That's a fascinating... I've always disappeared into the world of engaging with sound tech. And I think that is something to do with this concept that Csikszentmihalyi is called flow. So I think we all know that a feeling where you become so absorbed in something that time doesn't seem to exist and passes quickly, and it's challenging but not so challenging that you give up. And I get that through working with sound and technology and just really being immersed in that world. So that's I don't know, emotionally, but that's a really compelling sort of thing for me. But then I grew up singing in choirs, and I think there's a lot to be said for singing on your emotional well-being. I think it's an incredibly powerful, deep spiritual well-being thing, and especially to sing with other people, that sense of power and voice. That sense that you're singing a frequency and the person singing next to you is singing a frequency so close you can hear the beating. That power of connection. You know, I've grown up playing in string quartets, and that sense of moving with other people, I think, is very, very strong in terms of well-being and enjoyment in life. I don't do it enough.
Absolutely.
No doubt about that. I think as a humans, we have a tendency to think that we can process everything by our mind, our brains, and think that we can think right, but it's not always possible. I think music helps us to be transported to a different level of a consciousness. And also, music helps us to shift our thinking. And sometimes that shift is an unconscious shift. So that shift just happens without us noticing that the shift is happening. But it's only afterwards we look back and say, oh, actually, I enjoyed that because there has been that shift of the mind. So the music has the power to do that. I think many people should really be interested in music and playing instruments. It's fun.
What Dee Dee starts to touch upon there is a deeply profound musical experience which is enormously complex and difficult to discuss. Playing music shifts our consciousness to levels we cannot get to just by thought alone. It has many facets, all working together as one. Melody, rhythm and timbre, sometimes lyrical ideas, creativity and metaphor. We also experience this physical thing of frequency. Bass, particularly, seems to hit us in a very guttural, impactful and powerful way. One person who knows all about bass is DJ and sound system builder Paul Huxtable, who features in episode 7 of this podcast series. Here he is talking about music as a way to connect and to shift our consciousness collectively.
This, what I do, is a very human thing. I've said it before, but if you go back into history of humans, cave people, you have a fire, knock out a rhythm on a drum, sing songs, tell stories, dance. It's exactly the same as what I'm doing in 2019. It's no different. We've got music, we've got storytelling in the music, we've got rhythm, we've got family and friends around, you know what I mean? Unless you can do that in a safe, good environment, then it's not right, you know, it's got to be right. And people talk, when they're relaxed in a place, they talk on a certain level and they communicate and they make friends. People can come on their own and feel all right about it. They can come with friends or feel all right, or meet new people, meet old people or whatever. I'm into people communicating. That's, I think, is the only way forward amongst all the misunderstandings that we have of people, especially now. I think it's really important that people start opening dialogue. Doesn't matter on which side of the political fence, we should be able to talk about it, because basically all the same, I think people should be individuals but have respect for other individuals. It's a different kind of meditation. The music that I play, some of it is quite up-tempo, and some of it's very low-tempo, and some of it's mid-tempo. I like mountains and valleys, you know, when there's more space to think and understand what's going on in a low-tempo thing. It brings you down into a different zone, if you will. So, with the lyrics in reggae music, it's always been very important, and I say storytelling is important. I like people to listen to the lyrics. I mean, reggae covers all of it, hardships and joy and everything in between. Tradition, optimism, political, pricey cheese, everything is in reggae music. That's another great thing about it. It's not just the rhythm which keeps you going, it's the lyrics and the storytelling.
And once our consciousness has been shifted, we enter new worlds and time zones. We hear people talking about flow state or getting lost in the music. We leave our normal life behind and enter a realm of devoted, meditative otherness. The founder of the Huddersfield Community Gospel Choir, Edwin Baker, describes it better than I can. His fascinating story about the founding of the choir can be heard in episode 2 of this series. I strongly recommend going to listen to it, but before then, here he is now.
I almost don't notice. When we're in performance, I'm so into it that I just get lost in it. I get lost in the music, I get lost in the emotion of it, because, you know, you got to immerse yourself in it. And you've got to enjoy the experiences, which, you know, and once we start to sing, the effect that choir has on an audience is amazing. It's absolutely amazing. For a group of individuals, a lot of whom had never sang before, who, you know, just come together for the love of it, put the work in and just sing. I'm more pleased for them than anybody else, because for them to experience the reactions that they get and the appreciation and the thanks afterwards and see new members come because of their performances, you can't beat that.
Performing is a whole other experience, one that many people never quite get used to. It can be riddled with feelings of anxiety and imposter syndrome, and it's certainly not for everyone. But for those who it is for, it's unbeatable. Singer Ruby Wood talks in episode 1 and 9, and now again here.
Performing on stage is like my favourite thing about making music. I mean, some people obviously like writing and stuff like that, but I think for me, it's just a big show off, really. I love being on stage. I love like connecting with audiences, and I love that. That kind of fight or flight, you know, the adrenaline you get when you're about to go on stage, you know. It probably helps. I'd probably be a right mess if I didn't sing. Now that I've got my, I feel really excited about the songs that I'm writing, and that definitely makes me feel really good and happy. And singing with my daughter, I love that. Yeah, just like the experiences of playing music with different people. Like, I love when we rehearse with Chungi, and just talking about music in general is lovely, isn't it?
It is.
It is, it's good. More people should sing. Even if, I mean, people do that in the shower, I think. I always tell the kids at school, I'm like, because I'm doing singing with them at the moment, and I'm like, oh guys, it's really good for you, singing, you know? It's really, it's uplifting, and I think they get that. And I've joined Huddersfield Gospel Choir as well, and some Tuesdays I'll feel, because it's on the day where I've been teaching, sometimes I think, oh, maybe I'll just get an early night tonight. But then I drag myself along and I come away, and it's amazing how uplifted you feel. Like, I kind of skip all the way home after that. Like, so yeah, it's powerful. It is.
Even those who love an audience to play to feel music has something particularly special about it, regardless of whether anyone is listening. This is rapper Rob Bradley. Hear him speaking more on the topic in episode 9.
But I think if you never got to connect with an audience again, I'd still just be making music. It definitely serves an intrinsic purpose. It's cliche, but I think it does. I think it keeps me healthy mentally.
At the core of all this, of course, is joy. Because if music didn't make you feel good, if it didn't transport you to another consciousness, if it didn't connect you with other people or improve your understanding of the world, well, basically, if music wasn't joyful, then it wouldn't exist. It doesn't serve an obvious physical, tangible, real-world purpose. It's not like food, it doesn't literally keep us alive, and it's not like science, it doesn't literally tell us anything about the world. Whilst it is extremely powerful, it's also quite subtle. As Aidan said near the start of this podcast, musicians and music lovers can go without it. But when they do, they lose the good place. What that good place is exactly can't be pinpointed, but for simplicity's sake, we can call it joy. This is Graham Rushworth from episode 3 and Mark Bukovets from episode 1 and 11.
I can honestly tell you there have been instances playing with Paul and Witch Doctors or other bands when it clicked, and I would shout and scream with joy, pure joy, nothing like it. It is a major part of my life still. Once you start playing less, you don't lose interest. Something opens up in music-wise, and you want to nail it and see what's going on.
It will be. I mean, if I want to chill out, I'll just put some music on. It feels as if I want to, put it this way, if I'm feeling a little down, maybe, I'll put something that's up in terms of music. I might even listen to a bit of reggae, you know, and that affects, obviously, affects you. It gives you that bounce, it gives you that good feeling, and making our own music as well. But it's so easy these days. You've got hundreds of millions of sounds and music you can listen to. It definitely does affect both of our well-being and feeling of, well, just a joy mainly, really, you know. Couldn't live without music, basically.
And there we have it. Music is the gift of life. And its gift, whilst complex and multifaceted, basically boils down to something quite simple. It provides us with joy, and therefore makes life enjoyable. And talking about pleasure, this podcast series has truly been a pleasure to make. After every single one of my interviews with people, I've come home feeling completely awestruck. My guests have been given a great responsibility. Most of us rely on music, as we've just heard, and we might not know it, but we kinda need it in our lives. My guests are the ones making sure we can have it. Each task is enormous, whether it's organising music festivals, playing in brass bands, bringing music from across the world, doing research or teaching the next generation. Each one of these people have taken on a task that has consumed their entire lives. They act in service to a collective greater good, so we can sit back and enjoy. And yet, not a single one of my guests seem anything but humble. It's like this great responsibility that they've been given was also the best gift that the universe could have provided them. We've heard about the hard times, the rejected funding, the empty gigs, the postnatal depression, the ill health, the pandemic, the broken bands, the exploitation, and the financial difficulty in this podcast series. And yet, what struck me most about my guests, the overwhelming feeling I had at the end, is that here we have a group of hardworking people that sacrifice their lives for the greater good, but they do not feel entitled to anything. They continue to feel like they still owe the world something in exchange for this gift of life, this gift of music. I certainly will be forever grateful to be given the lessons that I've learned from my interviewees. So thank you to them all for joining me, and thank you to you for listening. It has been a joy. Signing out for the last time. See you in the real world.
This was a Let's Go Yorkshire and Sam H. Song production. The host and producer was Sam Hudson. The podcast has been supported by Kirklees Council, Kirklees Year of Music 2023, and the National Lottery Heritage Fund. Town Sounds explores the musical histories of Kirklees to uncover untold stories through the voices of local people living musical lives. For more information on this podcast, please visit musicinkirklees.co.uk.